Another week and another episode from the show that tries to comfort you in your sleepless nights or your cold mornings, with some interesting topics that delve into what seems to be those places that our minds don't wander to. But we always think about it unconsciously, though. In the last episode, I've talked about time, and how we move through it, how we perceive it, what it actually is, and how Einstein defined it, connecting it to both the special and general theory of relativity. I've also talked about the possibility of time travel, and how movies and some popular games played with that concept. It was an amazing topic that I really wanted to expand more upon, without making it as boring as it may sound, because that episode had a bit of physics sprinkled into it. But sitting back the past few months, getting my shit in order, and making myself a bit better every day, I went back to Silent Hill, the game series that comforts me, but I'm still not sure why. But it gives me solace, peace, and serenity in a way. But this time, I replayed a somewhat controversial game in the Silent Hill community. Most people never played it and just kinda brushed it off. But for me, I loved it, even though there are some recurring parts that I didn't like. But nonetheless, it's a memorable experience, and the history of its making is what kinda got me to play it. And that game is Silent Hill Shattered Memories. It's the black sheep of the series among the Silent Hill community members, and to a certain extent, they're right. Silent Hill Shattered Memories, and honestly all the other Silent Hill games, are overshadowed by arguably the best horror game of all time, Silent Hill 2, and I've talked about it more thoroughly in a previous episode. Silent Hill was developed by Climax Studios UK, in a post-Team Silent era after the team got disbanded after making Silent Hill for The Room. Climax Studios UK made the game after it, which is Silent Hill Origins, which touched more on the occult of Silent Hill and other characters we meet in the first game. Some people loved it, but I was among those who found the gameplay to be so bad I couldn't finish it. You can check out on YouTube Silent Hill Origins retrospective made by the one and only Avalanche Reviews, as he goes much more in depth in how the gameplay is bad. So, after the success of Silent Hill Origins and the epic fail among fans that is Silent Hill Homecoming made by Double Helix, Konami had to go back to Square One, and Konami wanted to follow it up with another PSP title. However, Silent Hill's US producer, William Ortel, was pushing his own rather unlikely pet project. He was eager to make a Wii-based first-person shooter, and invited Climax to pitch for it. The pitch became Brahms BD, a spinoff from the main franchise that cast players as an amnesiac police detective on the Brahms force looking for their missing partner. And the main idea for a new gameplay element was a data-driven under-the-hood system that psychologically profiled players as they played, labeled as the world's first truly interactive psychological horror. Brahms BD planned to use in-game sessions with a police psychiatrist to analyze the player. Based on your responses, it would analyze your personality type and change the game's content and ending accordingly, creating a warp-around nightmare tailored for each player. And the game producers wanted the game to respond to players, not just to the choices they made, but also to how they played the game. When Brahms BD failed to find traction with the Konami higher-ups, Climax decided to put together another pitch for an original Wii outing that it named Silent Hill Cold Heart, swapping out the series' traditional foggy setting for a frozen world of snow and ice. Cold Heart's story was based on a psychologically traumatized university student named Jessica Chambers as she explored the eerie town of Silent Hill during a snowtown. Silent Hill Cold Heart is what pushed me to play the final game in a sense. I was checking out a Silent Hill fan site called SilentHillMemories.net, and I went through the stories of how the first and second game were made. But then I checked out Shattered Memories, and I saw that goddamn poster for Cold Heart, and something just grabbed me. I loved the idea, the name, and everything about it. And in contrast to Shattered Memories poster with the frozen child, it doesn't compare at all. Now that poster was a part of the pitch document that was made for Konami. It was made public after a giveaway by the developers. I've read the whole pitch deck, and as simple as it was, it resonated with me. Silent Hill Cold Heart's gameplay featured dynamic sub-zero environments which required the player to scavenge food and clothing to keep their body temperatures up. It also had a psychological profiling system similar to the one mooted in Brahms BD, a persistent feature in all of Climax's Silent Hill pitches, The producers loved the idea, but at Konami, someone remembered that they've greenlit a Silent Hill 1 remake, but never reached development. So they went and pushed the idea of this Wii game to be a Silent Hill 1 remake, and the seventh game in the Silent Hill franchise was suddenly a go. As the concept evolved, Silent Hill Cold Heart gave way to Silent Hill Shattered Memories. It took the core story of the original Silent Hill, Harry Mason searching a supernatural town for his missing daughter, and gave it a postmodern twist. It also made the use of the Wii remote as both a crowbar and flashlight, and featured the same psychological profiling system that the team had been pushing since Brahms BD was first pitched. By tracking the Wii remote flashlight as it moved around the screen, Shattered Memories engine crunched the data about what the player was looking at. Linger too long on a poster of a half-naked woman, and the game would track that and add it to the dataset it was building about your personality type. But then the developers pushed the idea of Shattered Memories being a reimagining of the game, more than a one-to-one remake, so that they would have creative freedom over the progression of the story, its characters, and scenery. The only two concepts that the developers didn't change were the psychological profiling system and the icy cold scenery. Where in the first few games of the series, the other world was a gritty, metal, and rust-covered world. Now they changed it to a cold, icy, and dark scenery. And I really loved it in the game, but it had one of the game's biggest flaws, which was another problem for the developers as they wanted to push for a broader audience with the Wii, making it a game that can be enjoyed by non-horror people. So the combat became a problem, since every game before this one had featured a different type of combat system. And the original Silent Hill game had the 10 controls and RE style of shooting while being still. So you can't escape your enemies while shooting. So the devs finally decided to nuke the combat system, changing it from a melee into a pure evasion system. Think of it like Outlast if you ever played it. You can't fight back, you can only hide and run. Which sucks so bad in this game, since you basically get chased by these things called raw shocks in different places during different set pieces. You'd need to navigate through an ice version of each level you progress through, and just keep running around and around until you get to the correct door to get you out of this maze, and you can kinda navigate it a bit easier with a map inside your phone, which I guess is time to talk about it now. During the game, you have a phone that you can use for various tasks, and it functions as your main menu. You can save your game there. Most interestingly, you can call different numbers you find around the world and get some world-building narrative. You also have a camera which you can use to see these things called echoes. Throughout the game, Harry will come across echoes left by past events. These echoes are certain places that cause distortion. Harry's phone starts to crackle as well as his flashlight flickers near such places. The nearer you are, the louder the static noise is. If you get close enough to the echo, you'll get an echo message, a message from the past. Messages can be either texts or voicemails, which can help you understand the context of the place you're currently exploring, or stories about Silent Hill as a town. Now, one thing you would love about this game is its lighting. Its lighting is just fantastic. And I played the game on the PSP port, but there's also a PS2 version that I checked out recently, and it's so much better. But you can't see the PSP port and not be amazed by the lighting they made. Basically, the same game that was made for the Wii hardware and ported to the PS2 got ported perfectly to the PSP. Of course, the textures and resolution are a bit off, but every single piece of text in the game is readable, like posters, flyers, and the lighting is just exactly the same. And now that you've heard me gush about the story of how this game was meant to be, now we'll delve about how the story turned out to be. We start the game with psychiatrist Michael Kaufman preparing for a new patient. He pours himself a glass of whiskey, and his receptionist tells him that his new patient has arrived early. Dr. Kaufman acknowledges that this is fine. Meanwhile, Harry Mason, the protagonist of the game, has lost control of his car on the icy roads and crashes into a snowy embankment in a junkyard in the town of Silent Hill. Waking up from the crash, Harry realizes that his daughter, Cheryl, is missing, and he sets out to find her. Searching through Silent Hill's streets for Cheryl, Harry arrives at Diner 52 or the Good Old Days bar, depending on the player's choice, where he meets Sybil Bennett or the barmaid, respectively. During a conversation with either of them, Harry, suffering from amnesia, realizes that he lives in Silent Hill at 1206 11th Street with Cheryl. Harry then receives a phone call from home. Though he cannot hear anything but static, and comes to the conclusion that Cheryl must be at home waiting for him. On his way home, Harry receives another phone call and can hear Cheryl's and another person's voice. To Harry, this indicates that Cheryl is with someone else and may be in danger. Immediately after the call ends, the streets become consumed by the ice world. Harry soon comes across those creatures known as Rorschachs, who pursue him. Harry has no choice but to flee, and after a nightmarish chase, he successfully reaches his house on Levin Street. Another session with the psychiatrist begins, in which Dr. Kaufman discusses home and family life and asks the player to color in a picture titled Happy Family. Meanwhile, Harry encounters a couple, Mike and Lucy Stewart, inside his house whom he does not recognize. When Harry requests for Cheryl, the couple argue that she isn't there, and when Harry claims that it's his house, Lucy states that it is impossible as they have lived there for 14 years. Mike then shuts the door on Harry and Sybil eventually arrives. Sybil acknowledges that, judging from his license bearing that address, things don't add up. Sybil then takes Harry along with her in her police car to the police station to clear things up. However, before they can reach the police station, the snowstorm interrupts their drive and Sybil leaves Harry to find their location. Sybil never returns, so Harry leaves the car and wanders into the forest. While exploring the nearby hunting lodge, Sybil phones Harry to ask why he ran off, and Harry states that she abandoned him. Harry then decides to head back to Silent Hill and hangs up on her. After another nightmare sequence through the forest, Harry follows a path leading him to Midwich High School's football field. There, Sybil phones Harry once again and he fibs to her, telling her that his phone's reception went out. Sybil directs Harry to the high school's gym so that she can reunite with him, which is also used as a shelter during snowstorms. Harry understands that Cheryl may also be there and agrees. In his third session, Dr. Kaufman discusses the player's life in high school. Harry explores more of Silent Hill and Midwich High School, where he meets a woman named Michelle Valdez inside the school's gym. Michelle reveals to Harry that she once knew a Cheryl Mason who went to Midwich and shows him a school photograph of her. Although the girl resembles Harry's daughter, this Cheryl is an adult and not a child. Harry and Michelle enter the principal's office to find Cheryl's records, and in doing so, they discover that they are indeed the same person and that Cheryl moved to Simmons Street. During another nightmare sequence, Harry learns that Cheryl was bullied by her peers at Midwich. After the nightmare, Harry reunites with Michelle outside the school. Harry follows Michelle to the Balkan, a nightclub where she works. After leaving Michelle downstairs while he searches her room for her car keys, he finds that a young woman identifying herself as Dahlia is sitting in Michelle's place upon his return. Dahlia seems surprised at his confusion, though she isn't interested enough to explain anything to him. She tells him that she came to pick up the SUV parked outside to take Harry to Simmons Street, where he would meet up with Cheryl at his current address. Upon reaching the bridge on their way through the town, the ice world takes over, freezing Dahlia, and then the bridge itself collapses. The SUV plummets into the river below, trapping the two inside. As Harry struggles to escape, Dahlia is motionless, still frozen. Depending on the player's actions, Harry can either turn on the radio and escape, or drown. Back at the psychiatrist's office, Kaufman speaks to the player about death in his fourth session. Sometime later, Harry awakens at El Camila Hospital, having been saved by Sybil. She tells Harry the events he described could not have happened, and that he must have swam in the river and could have died. Another nightmare sequence occurs and freezes Sybil during their conversation. And once again, Harry escapes the nightmare. Then he runs into Lisa Garland, a nurse who works at El Camila who has been involved in a car accident. Harry decides to keep her company as they walk into her apartment. Inside, Lisa asks Harry to get some medicine from the bathroom to help with her headaches. Once Lisa falls asleep, Harry leaves, and before Harry is able to enter the Lucca Mall, Lisa phones him, pleading for his help. When Harry arrives back at her apartment, Lisa is now dead. Sybil appears, ordering Harry to freeze. Seconds before the nightmare happens again, Sybil tells Harry that she knows that he isn't Harry Mason. And the plot thickens. After another nightmare sequence, Harry finds himself inside Toluca Mall. After a search in the mall, Harry arrives at the Simmons Street address, where he finds an older version of Dahlia he met before. Dahlia reveals two things to Harry. They are married and that Cheryl is at the lighthouse. The nightmare reappears, freezing her, and Harry soon finds himself in a nowhere-like area. Afterwards, Harry enters what appears to be Cheryl's bedroom and falls asleep on her bed. Meanwhile, in the psychiatrist's office, Kaufman talks about marriage in the sixth session. Harry wakes up in Cheryl's room. Michelle is beside him, and she offers him a car ride to the lighthouse. During the car ride, an argument takes place between Michelle and her boyfriend, John, which results in them both leaving the car. Harry finds himself at the sewers and then, later, Annie's bar. Inside the bar, Michelle tells Harry that she broke up with John and that he can reach the lighthouse by crossing Toluca Lake using a boat which can be found at the moor located behind the amusement park. In the seventh session, Dr. Kaufman talks about sexuality. Harry passes through Lakeside Amusement Park and finds a boat at the moor. Inside, Harry finds the young Dahlia again and asks her to take him to the lighthouse, to which she reluctantly agrees. Dahlia seduces Harry and it is implied that they have sex. Sometime after, Harry wakes up in the ice world, which freezes Dahlia again. The lake water has been transformed into ice, and Harry sets course to the lighthouse by walking on the frozen lake. Raw sharks begin to pursue Harry, however they suddenly freeze. The lake's icy surface transforms back into water, and Harry passes out while swimming to the lighthouse. Sybil is now on the lighthouse shore and she saves Harry once again, although Harry snatches her gun, saying he will not let her stop him from finding Cheryl. Sybil states that she does not understand what is going on, as she looked up his file, which showed that Harry Mason died 18 years ago in a car crash. Sybil leaves Harry and he enters the lighthouse, which is in fact Dr. Kaufman's clinic. It is revealed that Kaufman's patient is actually Cheryl Mason, who is now 25 years old. Dr. Kaufman explains how Cheryl had been desperately holding on to the memory of her father, and that the Harry that the player has been controlling is a manifestation of Cheryl's delusion. After Kaufman's explanation, one of three conversations can happen between Harry and Cheryl, followed by one of five endings. The plot, when summarized like this, one wouldn't find it as appealing, but during the gameplay, you exploring everything there is to explore, you would find it extremely intriguing. At least, that's how I found it. And I played it in what the people say the inferior port of the game, but I loved the story and the game alike. The plot isn't as deep as something like Silent Hill 2, but in my opinion, it did what it set out to do perfectly. It was a horror experience, although it leans more on the thriller side of horror as it lacks any combat mechanics. When you compare this game to one of the other post-Team Silent games, like Homecoming or Downpour, this game didn't just copy Silent Hill's 2 idea, that our protagonist is going through some trauma and they uncover a dark past or something that they did. This was a breath of fresh air. And in terms of the game being a reimagining more than a remake, it was worth the time spent playing. Now, I wanted to delve a bit more on where is the psychological profiling system in terms of gameplay. Now, you remember the Kaufman sessions I just told you about, right? Well, in each session, Kaufman either asks you some questions or gives you something to interact with, like coloring the house, the checklist, and even had a how you want to die question by arranging a series of pictures of people that look sleeping or dead. And all these questions and sessions basically boil down to API, a personality inventory, which controls various aspects of the game. Conversation with characters, attitudes, outfits they wear, and the ending are all impacted by your PI. But you can have one of five main types. Sexual, the most common one, primarily influences appearances, and what most people get on their first playthrough. If you look at a few posters or a woman's tits, you'd be assigned this PI. Friendliness, primarily influences interactions with people. Family, primarily affects the ending cutscenes, which is the one that I got on my first playthrough. Alcoholic, primarily influences Dahlia and the ending cutscenes. Fake, only influences the ending. Each of these are fairly obvious, except for the fake PI. The fake PI only impacts the ending cutscenes and suggests that you aren't interested in the doctor's therapy. Basically, to build this PI, take every opportunity to appear as though you aren't answering the questions truthfully, like contradicting yourself at every turn. Each type of PI is evaluated when you come to a part of the game that includes something that changes according to your current PI. Whichever PI you have been building the most of will take precedence over every other type. Though it is rare that a single object with PI will change anything, like you can't expect something to change based on a single event, the whole idea is to evaluate your trends and create a psychological profile. This is collected by a multitude of actions/responses, That said, there are some events that are much more influential than others, hence those therapy sessions with Dr. Kaufman. And of course, what you point your view to and zoom in will be taken into account as well. Now, it's clearly the time to talk about the ending. The ending you get has two parts, one where Harry and Cheryl meet, and another one which is a videotape. The reason for this division is because your PI can impact either in a particular manner. For example, the drunk dad ending is only related to the videotape, and is not reflected in the encounter between Harry and Cheryl. Likewise, the Hero Forever ending is only reflected in the encounter and not the videotape. For the first part, you have one of three endings. The first one is Broken, where Harry kneels before Cheryl. They gaze at each other, unsure of how to say goodbye. She says, "You've been with me for so long." And Harry smiles and replies, "I will always be." Cheryl closes her eyes and shakes her head in a final goodbye. The ice creeps up over Harry, sealing him in her memories forever. And this was the ending I got. The second ending is Bearer of Guilt, where Harry stands before his daughter. He knows that she can't forgive him, nor does he want to be forgiven. Cheryl stands up and confronts her guilt. Withholding her tears, she says, "Why did you have to die? It wasn't my fault," she cries. "Someone has to take the blame." Harry approaches her with open arms to try to comfort her, and she stops him, holding his hands away from her. They both feel cold to each other. "Forget me," Harry whispers as he retracts away from his daughter. His body freezes as he steps back, his eyes frozen upon Cheryl. He crumbles on the floor. The third ending is Hero Forever, where Harry kneels down before her. "You're a hero," she smiles, happy with a father she loves in the truth. "The man who died, that wasn't my father." She pauses, taking a breath. Her eyes begin to water. "That isn't who I remember. Those memories are all I have. You're all I have." He turns from her. "I'm not even a ghost," he whispers. Cheryl shakes her head, unable to bear losing him. She wraps her arms around him slightly, tears streaming down her face. They hold each other closely, and for once, Cheryl feels warm. Now for the second part of the ending, you can have one of four endings here. And it is a series of clips after the encounter between Harry and Cheryl. They're all presented as part of a homemade videotape. First, we have Love Lost, where Harry places his suitcase on the ground and he turns to his wife. So many words come to mind, but he says nothing. He just stares at the woman standing before him. "You be careful," Dahlia swiftly requests. "Sure," Harry nods slightly, not concerned about safety for the moment. "Harry," Dahlia tries to explain. Harry holds up his hand. "We've said enough. Let's just..." He turns and notices Cheryl recording the farewell. "Sweetie, don't film this. This is not a memory he wishes to keep." He approaches Cheryl and he kneels before her. "You know this has nothing to do with you, right?" Dahlia crosses her arms and listens from the background. "Even though Mom and Dad don't love each other anymore, we both love you, and we always will." He places his hand on top of the camera. "Now come on." Cheryl lowers the camera and turns it off. And sadly, this was the part I got for my ending. Another ending we have is Sleaze and Sirens, where you see Harry sitting in bed calling two girls, Michelle and Lisa, that we already met in the game. He says, "I'm Harry Mason, famous author and seducers of prom queens and nurses." And the girls ask him to dedicate the next book for them. Placing their hand on his chest, Harry declines and says, "Dedications are always to my wife and daughter. It's only fair." They join each other in laughter before falling back to bed. Let your imagination run wild, baby. The third ending we can get is Wicked and Weak, where Cheryl walks up down the dark hall playing with her video camera. She heads down towards her parents' bedroom to show them when she realizes that they're fighting again. Dahlia shouting at him and striking him multiple times, while Harry is seen saying nothing and holding his face. Dahlia towers over him, glaring down at the weak man before her, saying, "You're pathetic. You think that I used to hang off your every word to this waste of space." She strikes him again and Harry's glasses clack against the wooden floor. He bends over and picks them up, slowly returning them to his face. Then he notices Cheryl with her camera. For a moment he looks at her. Ashamed of himself, he remains silent. And finally, the drunken dad ending. Seeing Harry approaching the front porch, beer bottle in hand. "The hell are you filming me for? Am I supposed to dance for you?" In a mockery, Harry waves his arms around, and pretends to dance before collapsing to the porch in a drunken stupor. His beer spills on the ground. "Be a good girl for Daddy and go get him another drink, will ya?" Cheryl stares down at her fallen father. "Now, get me a damn beer," he demands. He sits up and looks at the bottle in hand. "No wonder I drink with a family like this." And a bonus one for you, the usual joke ending in every Silent Hill game, the UFO ending. And for the life of me, I never got the UFO ending in all the Silent Hill games I played. Now hopefully you see why this game is super interesting to experience. Even though the combat is non-existent and the hide-and-seek approach sucks the fun out of the exploration that this game intended to have, it still has a very special place in my heart. This year was a short one for me, between catching up with my career, trying to be better overall, and surviving every step of the way. This year did not end nicely for me, but we're still alive, and that's what we should aspire to do. Life is precious, you only have one. So go and warp your reality. Make it a place you would love to be in, and make it a place you would want to wake up in every single day. Hopefully this next year would be brighter, and a place and time you're willing to fight for. Thank you, Insomniac, so much for listening. Happy holidays and happy new year, and I hope to see you in that better reality.